Again, this is A22-1406. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Attorney Derek Tuft. Last name is spelled T-H-O-O-F-T. I'm here on behalf of the appellant in the matter of the cigarette and tobacco product shop license held by Bright Star, Inc., doing business as Tom and Joe's Market, which is a small corner store located at 684 Western Avenue here in St. Paul. Your Honors, today I'm asking that the court reverse the decision of the St. Paul City Council in revoking the license of appellant for its first flavored tobacco violation because the City Council acted in an arbitrary and capricious manner when they made their decision. An agency's determination is arbitrary and capricious when an agency A, relied on factors not intended by the legislature, B, entirely failed to consider an important aspect of the problem, C, offered an explanation that runs counter to the evidence, or D, the decision is so implausible that it could not be explained as a difference in view or the result of the agency's expertise. Your Honors, my argument relies on 3 points. First, the penalty matrix, which was passed by the legislature in December of 2022 with amendments. Your Honors, the penalty matrix says that for a first flavored tobacco offense, the presumed punishment is a 10-day suspension. Second, I rely on the fact that the city attorney at the city council hearing is allowed unlimited time, including the ability to use images and documents in their argument, while me, the attorney for the appellant, is only allowed 2 minutes. It's impossible in 2 minutes to outline the circumstances, the complex circumstances in a case like this. Finally, Your Honors, the City Council was confused as to the number of violations as shown in the transcripts. It's clear from the transcripts that the confusion related to how many prior violations there were. Your Honors, there was one prior violation for an underage sale, which occurred 2 years prior to this violation. The presumed penalty here is for a flavored tobacco product violation. This was the first violation that the appellant, Bright Star, Inc., had received.
Counsel, would you describe the quantity of flavored tobacco product that was discovered in this investigation?
Yes, Your Honor. In the investigation, I believe the figure that was used was about 60 to 70% of the product within the store was flavored tobacco product, or rather, I would say it was in violation of an ordinance, not allowed to have it. I don't believe all of that was flavored tobacco product, but the majority of it was.
So 60 to 70% of all the product in the store was in violation?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Of the license. And so what about the claim that each product is a separate violation? I mean, I realize that's not the finding that we're looking at here. We have a finding of a single violation, but there is the theory that each of those products is a separate violation. Is that invalid?
Your Honor, I would disagree with that. I would argue that the presence of the products is the violation. And just to outline how these products are obtained, just a little bit of background on this. When a corner store, a tobacco outlet, whatever it may be, orders these products, they place an order with their distributor. They're then given bulk products, including samples, other products that they're allowed to check out, which then goes on the store's shelves, Your Honor, just to clarify how they're received. Your Honor, Your Honors.
I guess I'm not following your reasoning, though. So why does that mean that, you know, when you say the presence is a violation, is it one violation or is it, you know, 60, 70% of the product in the store? I mean, that sounds like a lot to me.
Your Honor, I would argue it's one violation. The violation is when the city inspector goes and sees that within the store there's flavored tobacco for sale. I would argue that having products in the store that are flavored tobacco for sale is the violation. It's not the amount that's there. It's not that, you know, if there's 7,000 flavored tobacco products, you would have 7,000 violations. That's not how the penalty matrix works, nor how I've seen this applied in the city council.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you see why I'm asking, you know, because there is, as you said, the presumed sentence is this 10 days of suspension, but there is this option that city council has based on substantial compelling circumstances to depart from that. And it seems to me that's what's happened here. So if you'd address how the quantity of product affects or supports or doesn't support the decision to depart by revocation, I'd appreciate that.
Thank you, Judge, and I will address that. So in this instant case, over half of the products that were in the store were prohibited products, flavored tobacco or other items that were not allowed to be sold without the proper licensing in the city of St. Paul. When we look at the other products that were being sold in the store, it includes everything from milk, butter, pop, all the way to common tobacco products, lighters, just about anything one can imagine. In this particular circumstance, 60% of the tobacco products that were there fell under the flavoring designation, Your Honor. In addition to that, I would argue that the designation is not clear on what's considered a flavored product, the education materials that are distributed to the people that sell these products are not consistent, and the law is consistently changing. So, Your Honor, I would submit to the court that it's near impossible for the stores that are selling these products to keep up with the law, with the changes, and with the education materials. One thing that could be flavored today could be redefined as flavored or not flavored in the future. Additionally, there's an argument as to what is considered flavored. Is the simple application of menthol, some other chemical that changes the flavor, change it to a flavored tobacco product, or does it have to fall within the actual definition of the flavors included by the city?
So I'm a bit confused by that argument because I thought that the facts included statements on behalf of your client saying that they intended to return these flavored tobacco products, that they weren't going to sell them.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So why would that be true if they were if the only reason they had them is that they were confused and they thought it was okay to have them? I mean, how are those two things both true?
And I would submit, Your Honor, that the confusion occurred after the violation was apparent. Once they had realized that a violation was apparent, they looked back at their policies, they visited with their vendors, they visited with their producers to decide what was in violation and what was not in violation. On that note, Your Honor, I would just like to address that. Once the violation had been made apparent, once the notice had been brought in, my firm was hired by the appellant, and we went through their policies, we reviewed their policies, and actually sat down with them to review their vendor forms. I can submit to the court that these vendor forms are not, it's not a very substantial form. You put in the product you want, you put in the manufacturer, and then you place the order. It's done on credit. They pay for the products after they've received them. Once it was apparent that they had banned products, products that violated the ordinances here in St. Paul, we went through each and every product that they had. We went through their order forms. They returned the products that were in violation, altered the order forms, and had a long discussion with the provider to address any potential issues in the future, Your Honors.
How do you deal with and I understand an argument that, you know, they made a mistake, they were going to turn it. But the facts indicate that some of the flavored products were kind of concealed, which would sort of undercut the argument. I mean, that would seem to be the exact opposite. No, we're not returning it. We're actually hiding it because we are selling it. What are we to do about that fact?
Yes, Your Honor. I would submit that would have been something I would have needed to argue more in front of the city council. Plain and simple, the assertion that these products were hidden, that a great amount of effort had went into concealing them, is false. The fact is, this is a tiny store. Head to toe, this is covered in products, whether it's milk, boxes, candy, tobacco products. We're talking about a store that I believe is 600 or 700 square feet. We're talking about an immensely small space where literally every cupboard, every drawer, every open space is being used to store things. These products were not concealed. They were placed along with valid products, other products, candies, and other things throughout the store. So I take issue with the assertion that these products were concealed, that a great amount of effort had went into concealing the products. They were in the store. That's not debatable. But the fact that they were hidden or concealed, I do take issue with. The fact is they were found in a jacket pocket, under the register, in plain view in the store, and in a chair or a couch that had storage under the cushion. Had my client been attempting to hide, conceal, in any way, you know, hide the eight ball in this case, Your Honor, he had the ability to conceal these products and not have them open on the counter that anybody and everybody could see when they visited the store.
You know, obviously, you know, the city of St. Paul has their grid, just as the district courts have the sentencing guidelines, and, you know, there is presumptive sentences. But then, as Judge Bradfeld accurately pointed out, you know, you get to depart either from the grid or the guidelines if there are substantial compelling reasons. And again, you know, I've written down over half the items in the store were flavored products. Why isn't that in and of itself a substantial compelling reason to depart from the grid?
Your Honor, I would cite to the fact that...
Why was that error to cite that as a substantial and compelling reason to depart from the grid?
Your Honor, I would cite to the fact that in all of these cases that come before the City Council, we're talking about more than 50, a substantial amount of these products being flavored tobacco. The way that it works with the producers, you don't order, you know, one flavored product, 10 flavored products. You have to make a bulk order. In addition, even when you're making a regular order, very oftentimes these orders are supplemented with flavored products. These tobacco producers want to get these products in the hands of their distributors to then distribute out to the general public. So, Your Honor, I would take,
so
I would
are
agree.
You saying it's impossible to order? I guess what I don't understand is, and I don't know how this works, but are you saying it's impossible to order tobacco products without the manufacturers slipping in some of these flavored tobacco products because they want them to move too?
Not impossible, Your Honor. This is actually an issue that we dealt directly with my client with, but it does take a lot of effort. You have to explicitly address that issue. You have to, in writing on the order form, request that no samples be included, or if samples are included, they be unflavored tobacco, and then what we did is actually listed what would be included in unflavored tobacco, because once again, the educational materials and even the laws on this are not 100% clear. Your Honor, I take issue with how the city made their decision, and I still argue that it's arbitrary and capricious. Three ways to show that it's arbitrary and capricious. The first is that the council used their will and not their judgment. The second is that the council based their decision on a whim. And the third is that the council's decision was devoid of articulated reasoning. Your Honors, when I have 2 minutes to argue in front of the council, and the city has an unlimited time in which they're able to present images, documents, and other evidence, it's hard to find that the council's decision was not based on a whim. As we look at the council's decision,
and maybe I missed it. This seems like the first time I'm hearing about this 2 minute argument. Is that in your brief? I only had 2 minutes to talk to the city council?
It is in the brief, Your Honor, and we did as well attach an exhibit which showed the instructions from the council and I'll look at my brief quick so I can point it out.
Well, I don't want to take up your time. I mean, just keep going.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I do realize I have a minute and 6 seconds left, so I will be brief and come to a conclusion.
By all means, don't do what I'm doing, which is fumbling through your brief to find the
Thank you, Your Honor. When I have a moment, I will look at that and inform the court. Your Honors, this case comes down to how the City Council of St. Paul applies this law. I submit to the court that it's not an equal application. They allow some to serve a suspension, they give some conditions, and others get revoked. They simply apply what they want with no rhyme or reason. It comes down to the city council making decisions using their will, whims, and devoid of articulated reasoning. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Council. And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll now hear for counsel for the city, please.
May it please the court, my name is Teresa Scarda, and I represent the City of St. Paul Department of Safety and Inspections. The case before you involves a purposeful violation of St. Paul ordinances that prohibit flavored tobacco products from being sold in tobacco shops. Licensees are responsible for what occurs within their licensed premises, and they have an obligation to comply with the ordinances and statutes that govern the licenses they hold. I'm going to go a little off script here to address a couple of the questions raised by Your Honors of my counterpart. With respect to Judge Brantvold's question regarding multiple violations, St. Paul Legislative Code 310.05M2 addresses multiple violations. And generally, in a notice of violation, we don't list and count each separate violation as a separate offense. Just like in a criminal case, if I used to practice criminally, if I had a defendant that made 17 phone calls in violation of an order for protection, I didn't charge him with 17 different offenses in the same criminal complaint. But the multiple violations section of the code does say the occurrence of multiple violations shall be grounds for departure from such penalties in the council's discretion. I would argue that council briefed and the record shows that council discussed this multiple violations, the lack of mistake, and used that basis as an upward basis for upward departure. With respect to this two-minute argument that council is raising, my role before council is to present a staff report. Either party can use the overhead projector and present, and I would refer the court to St. Paul Legislative Code Section 310.05, Hearing Procedures, C1. And the procedure, so we council basically asks an ALJ to hear the facts, come up with findings, conclusions, and recommendations. Section C1 of our legislative code says that council shall consider the evidence contained in the record and the hearing examiner's recommended findings of facts, conclusions, and shall not consider any factual testimony not previously submitted to and considered by the hearing examiner. After receipt of the hearing examiner's findings, conclusions, and recommendations, the council shall provide the applicant or licensee an opportunity to present oral or written arguments alleging error on the part of the examiner in the application of law or interpretation of the facts. Generally, in my experience, that's either been argued at the podium or more frequently, opposing counsel would submit into the record, take the ALJ's findings of fact and cross out and say, this is an error, and this is why I believe an error. That was not done in this case. There's no indication in the record that counsel had more to say, I don't believe this was raised below as a reason for not being able to present an argument, but I didn't go back in time how long the argument took. I would also say the St. Paul City Council's decision to revoke the tobacco shop license held by Relator and upwardly depart one step on the penalty matrix to revocation of its tobacco shop license was not arbitrary or capricious. It wasn't erroneous or based on unlawful procedures. Ample evidence in the record supports the decision of City Council. Their decision was made under their statutory authority that's granted to a municipality to regulate and license the retail sale of tobacco and tobacco-related devices. Under those statutes, a municipality can be more restrictive, and the City of St. Paul is. That's a policy decision that our council has made. They do not want prohibited flavored tobacco products in the hands of minors or people under 21. You under 21 actually aren't minors. They want to make sure that they aren't exposed to flavored products. So they've created two licenses, a tobacco shop license and a tobacco product shop license. Relator only holds a tobacco shop license. Therefore, people under 21 can come into a store. The record reflects that Relator was given notice of amendments to our legislative code related to the tobacco shop license, proper notice of the adverse action against his license, including the reasons for the upward departure that was recommended by the Department of Safety and Inspections and eventually adopted by City Council. He was also given a full opportunity to be heard, not only at an administrative hearing before Administrative Law Judge Case, but then again at the City Council hearing. The relator's argument that the decision of council is arbitrary and capricious because it couldn't be explained as a difference in the view of the agency's expertise. He believes that the decision of the City Council to adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and recommendations of Administrative Law Judge Case is arbitrary and capricious because the City Council failed to consider these important aspects of the problem. The record shows that the City Council did consider the issues that Relator identifies as important aspects. Relator argues that the City Council could have imposed license conditions on him instead of revoking the license. You know, not agreeing or liking the decision of City Council doesn't make it arbitrary or capricious or an error. I don't believe that there's a license condition fathomable that would regulate the level of willful disregard we're seeing in the record below. I know the master file contains the pictures that were submitted, that were taken by the investigator on scene. And I would also note that this was a complaint inspection. The inspectors were out on a complaint. They came in, they found exactly what they were told they would find. When it made its decision, the City Council had the proposed findings of fact, conclusions of law, and recommendations of Administrative Law Judge Case before it. And in her conclusions, the judge found that the city had reasonable cause to take adverse action against licensee's cigarette tobacco license, and that the city had shown substantial and compelling reasons to do so, and upwardly depart one box on the penalty matrix to revocation of the license. Judge Case's findings of fact and conclusions and recommendation also show that she listened to the testimony of Relator and the evidence, looked at the evidence and testimony presented by the city when she made her decisions. For example, in addressing the argument that our ordinances are confusing because they're stricter, Judge Case found that the license holder received education from the city regarding what they're permitted to sell and that licensees are advised of changes to the tobacco-related laws through city-provided mailings, outreach from city inspectors during inspections, and other educational programs promoted in conjunction with the Non-Smokers League. Judge Case also found that Relator's testimony regarding the prohibited products wasn't credible, that it was contrary to reason for her to believe that these flavored products were hidden in the couch and a jacket and because they were all being returned to a vendor. The Judge Case had the Relator before her. She had the opportunity to see and weigh that testimony. As to the decision of City Council to adopt the ALJ's findings of fact, conclusions of law, and recommendation, there's no factual basis in the record to support Relator's argument that the City Council failed to consider the arguments presented by Relator. In fact, the transcript from the City Council hearing shows quite the opposite. Attorney for Relator appears. He lays out the basis for his request that the City Council not upwardly depart. He addressed City Council, asked for a 10-day suspension. No mention was made, my recollection, about the imposition of conditions or how that might have prevented the really the blatant disregard of city regulations that we observe in the record. The city council members discussed this matter, made sure they understood the ramifications.
Ms. Carter, I did have a question. The license has been revoked. So how does that work then? Can you apply again? Is it a permanent revocation? I mean, do you have to wait a year? I'm just kind of wondering, is this it? You know, is this the death penalty for this store?
I refer to that as scorched earth, and it is not, depending on. So
you can apply for the license again, and is there like, well, you got to wait a year or something? I mean, so there's some process to apply again.
There is, Your Honor. I would qualify that the process is 5 years.
Okay.
So the licensee can reapply. However, I would note that council has also limited the number of licenses available. So when a license is revoked, someone else may take that license, or, you know, when 5 years is up, if that licensee comes back and there's not a license available, they would most likely have to wait until there's one available.
I see. Thank you.
Good. Council, could they have taken a number of intermediate sanctions short of revocation?
So it is, Your Honor, it's within the council's discretion to set the penalties. And they, within the last few years, have amended the penalty matrix to say that your first violation is a 10-day suspension and your second violation is revocation in this matter when it comes to single-sale cigarettes and flavored tobacco products. And that is council's clear will and the right to say, you know, council could say, for example, we're not going to allow the sale of any flavored tobacco products in the city. This is a gateway for youth. They feel very strongly about it. So while they certainly could have taken other intermediate steps, in this case, they found that not only was the 10-day suspension inappropriate, not applicable because of the blatant disregard, they moved to revocation. And I think Council Member Ballinger, when he discusses revoking the license, he made sure that we're not closing the store here, are we? They can still operate. And yeah, they can still operate as a store. They can't sell tobacco while their license is revoked. And Council President Ballinger even made a motion to lay this over for a week to consider kind of what was being proposed. Council President Brenmoen then stated that, you know, this is okay. Sometimes these cases are complex. This is an upward departure, and it's good to get a little extra time. She also said one of the things that really struck out to her was that this store knew it was doing something wrong. You can tell because it was hiding things in a drawer, hiding things in a bag, under a chair, and hiding things in pockets as opposed to, oops, we just didn't know about this. And, you know, that shows that council is being very deliberate in their decision making. They take an extra week. They come back after the week is over, and they adopt the recommendation of the ALJ to revoke the license and upwardly depart.
Council, does the city have a history of doing anything between these two steps? I mean, substantial and compelling circumstances to depart, does that mean they have to go to the second remedy for a violation, which is revocation, or could they go somewhere in between, like a 6-month suspension?
Your Honor, while I would believe they certainly could go somewhere in between,
mm-hmm.
In my experience, that hasn't happened. I have seen counsel double and triply upward depart. One of the cases cited by Relator, Midway Amoco BP, was one where council, I believe, went from the second box on the penalty matrix, that's back when it was 4, all the way to revocation based on the behavior. Because it was so blatant. You know, when you think of, I guess in conclusion, the department works really hard to educate licensees. The city's goal here is compliance, not running around trying to catch these licensees doing something wrong. And obviously the ALJ and council believed that this was a willful disregard. The licensee is ultimately the responsible party, And the city doesn't want to become a complicit partner in this type of behavior. The relator has not met its burden on any of the arguments presented, and the decision of the City Council to revoke the tobacco shop license held by relator should be upheld. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Scarra. Counsel for the relator, you'll have the last word. Right ahead.
Thank you, Your Honors. Today I'm asking the court to reverse or remand the City Council's decision to revoke the license because the City Council was arbitrary and capricious in coming to their decision. I would like to cite to a case cited in my brief, Midway University and Hamlin, LLC. In my opinion, this case shows the different applications by the City Council and that, in fact, there are numerous ways that they can put in conditions and have in the past. In that case, Midway University in Hamlin, LLC, a small corner store operating as a tobacco shop, had more violations, but they were still given conditions to stay open. Their violations included shootings, disruptive crowds, open drug dealing on the premises, and ultimately, the City Council, while having the right to revoke their license, gave them conditions to stay open. Those conditions included surveillance cameras, monitoring, reporting back to the city. Ultimately, in that case, the license was revoked after they were unable to meet those conditions. Your Honors, I'd like to briefly touch on the penalty matrix, 324.10B, which was passed and updated by the legislature in 2021. Your Honors, I would cite that in this penalty matrix, the legislature clearly considered what options they had. Had they intended for a first violation to result in a revocation, they could have stated that. They had numerous opportunities to amend this and still, as recently as 2021, decided that the appropriate punishment for a first violation was a 10-day suspension. One other issue I'd like to quickly address, the term death penalty was used in terms of what revoking this license means for this shop. I understand that they can reapply after 5 years, as does my client, but in practicality, it's understood that this is a death penalty for this shop. Over 70% of their revenue is generated by tobacco products. The fact is, not many people go to these corner stores shopping for milk, groceries, those items. They come in shopping for tobacco, at which point my client is able to make other income on the other items that are sold. We're talking everything from, you know, diapers, formula, all the way up to the tobacco products that we're talking about here today. Finally, I would just like to come back to the fact of this arbitrary and capricious argument, which I keep citing to. I would state for the court that simply waiting a week by the City Council to make a decision without any other discussion on that, any other, at least that I have observed in what we requested and what we received, simply waiting a week does not prove that substantial thought was put into this. There's no, from my review of everything.
Why not? The taking the extra week would suggest that, you know, this is not going to be some snap decision that they did, that the council did recognize the seriousness of an upward departure, and rather than just, well, that's that, you know, well, then they thought about it some more. I disagree. I think it does show a little more reflection and less arbitrariness than if they just said, you know, you're out the door. So why am I wrong, counsel?
Your Honor, I would state you're right. I would simply submit to the court that based on the record, based on the transcripts, other than waiting a week, there was no other discussions about this. It's not that the council sat down and looked at other options, considered other things they could do. All that we're able to tell from the record is that they talked about it at the first meeting, they waited a week, and then they came back after a week and passed it. Finally, Your Honor, once the issue the flavored tobacco issue was brought to appellant's attention, I think it's relevant to look at the swift and expensive actions that they took to correct the issues. Once they had received their first notice of a flavored tobacco violation, they immediately took action to make sure that this issue did not happen again, with the hopes of meeting the requirements of the City of St. Paul and staying in business. I see that I'm running out of time, so with that, I will end, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Council. Thank you, Council. The matter is submitted. We will be issuing our decision within 90 days. That being our last oral argument of the day, we are adjourned.